Good. Thank you for your cooperation in sitting down. I hope you enjoyed the coffee, and I know that the valuable discussion we had prior to the break is was followed on by many insightful suggestions for Jordan and Avery and their subgroup. And I'm sure we're going to see many new applications to contribute to this subgroup in the coming hours and days, certainly, considering the level of interest. And of course, I've also seen a number of rapporteurs expressing how jealous they were that the staff accountability group would be considered the most important. So I'm expecting them in the remainder of our meeting to make sure and state how their group is the most important, or at least should be joined with more volunteers and so on. So with that, we're moving to the next point on our agenda, which is a discussion that is not specifically related to one subgroup, but rather addresses some potential commonality or joint issues for several groups. And Sebastian was the one raising this issue to the plenary with the draft document. So I will turn now to Sebastian for a short summary of this issue and document before, and so that we can then discuss how to proceed and what the next steps should be with that. Sebastian.
Thank you, Mathieu. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. I am a rapporteur of the ICANN Ombuds Office subgroup, but is with, I hope, a broader view that I came to you to discuss this issue. And of course, it will be the most important item for this meeting. But regardless of that, I have participated to different subgroups, and I am sure that the people who participate to more than one and eventually to all those subgroups came with some of the same question. It's that there will be new mechanism requested in the course of the work stream two, and where to put or to take care of those mechanisms, specifically regarding Ombuds' mission and also the new and future complaints office within staff, where we will put those mechanisms, who will be better suited to fulfill those new missions, and to do what we have the right structure, do we have the right structure to handle those requests? And that's these three questions who I try to answer in this document. The current situation, I will not describe it. We already discussed that. It's the ICANN Ombuds Office and the future complaints office within staff. But what I try to put in this moving world where all the subgroups are not yet settled, but I try to figure out in some of them what are the topics who could be a new mechanism who could be handled by the Ombuds Office, by the Complaints Office, or by another possible, if needed, office. And I find some issue in the, for example, in the diversity subgroup where there is a discussion about a diversity office. I got some inputs from SOAC accountability where there is some part of the discussion of what could be the role of the Ombuds Office regarding this issue. I found some in the staff accountability, even if it's here more than maybe in the others, a moving target. And there are some also in transparency. That's more stable as it's already going to some comments. But maybe there are something in other groups that need to be taken into account and put in this document to be sure that we bring all the new type of mechanism who can be handled by one, I will call that complaints offices, and that could be useful to design the future relationship between the two or three offices in that regard. And I guess I will stop here. My suggestion for possible solution was to allow some discussion, but I guess that the first two parts it's already enough to be discussed here if you wish, and I will be happy to not to answer questions but to participate to the discussion with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sébastien. So maybe the first thing is to make sure we have a shared understanding of the various groups where these discussions have taken place or that may be affected somehow. Obviously, the ombuds group, there was a discussion about this. There was, you mentioned the diversity group as well. Staff accountability, potentially, but hasn't come to this point. Other groups, transparency, right? In the appeals for the DIDP, in the DIDP process, if I'm not mistaken. That's already four subgroups that affected somehow by this discussion. Any others? SOEC accountability also? Okay. Pretty much. Nothing in human rights? We can do something about it. Any other group? That's already quite big. Because that's going to have also a connection with our discussion about whether or not we go for approval of the recommendations once we have consensus by the chartering organizations as a full package or in separated incremental approach subgroup by subgroup. Because obviously if there's connections in the various groups, then that's an issue. Just want to make sure the issue is clear for everyone about the point that Sébastien was raising and that... Okay. In the absence of objection to the fact that it's clear, I think the issue statement is okay. So now how do we move forward with that, Sébastien? Oh, I see Cavus' hand. Cavus, please.
Sorry. I think before we're talking of establishment of so many groups, we have to really consider the need of that group. Complaining group, praising group, accountability group, diversity group, too many generals but no soldiers.
I don't think we're speaking about adding a new group. We have enough.
So I think we have to really see the need of that, whether all of them could be considered in one place. I don't think that why complaint could not be under the ombudsman and so on, so why we need to have so many diversity of groups and so on and so forth, and it could not be manageable at the end. So let us be really careful. I'm not objecting, but just careful, really. Thank you.
Okay, so I don't think there was an intent from Sébastien, unless I'm mistaken, to create an extra group, but more to create awareness about connections between the existing subgroups. Correct, Sébastien? Okay. And then I think the next question is, how do we manage these connections as we proceed with the various groups? There's the ombuds review taking place right now. The reviewers may have maybe asked a few questions, I understand, about this. What's your suggestions about how to proceed now, Sébastien?
Two things. I think if in your subgroup there are specific issue dealing with the general term complaints, whatever form and how you want to be handled, please let the subgroup on ICANN Ombuds Office know, and we will try to take care of that. If your document, it's changed over the time, as I will not follow the tense in so much detail, maybe you can bring that to our attention also. And maybe if I can ask all this subgroup not to settle the solution, but what are the requirements about complaints? And it will be the next step that we will look at if it can fit within the ombuds arena, if it needs to go somewhere else, and if it's somewhere else, can it go to the ICANN complaints office staff organization, or do we need to have another place to do it? That's something we need to be open. That's the first thing. The second is that I think it could be useful to have the people who will review the ICANN Ombuds Office to take care of those questions. For the moment, I don't think we raised too much those issues because they were supposed to do what it was requested in the ATRT2, that means a review of the ICANN Ombuds Office. And what it was requested also in Workstream 1, it's to compare with the standard of international ombuds organization, and they will help us with that. But definitely, it will be a good element to ask them if those new requests could be handled by, from their point of view, by the ombuds office, and if yes, on the current ombuds office, or with the need of expanding or changing the way of the ombuds is working. Thank you.
Thank you, Sébastien. I've seen a couple of hands in the issue room and then they disappeared. I think there was Fiona and then Nils, but Fiona.
Fiona Songa, for the record. I think it's nice that the group handling the ombudsman's mechanisms is looking at how they interrelate with the other groups. But I think they need to give the other working groups time to complete their conversations and to be clear on what mechanisms they feel are going to be most appropriate in addressing and improving accountability within ICANN. Case in point is the diversity conversation. When we have not yet gotten to a point where we are critically reviewing the recommendations we want to give, yes, there's been discussion of a diversity office, but at this point in time when we are still gathering information, it becomes difficult to really firm up on whether that diversity function should sit with the ombudsman or not, because it depends on the scope of what we assign as the role of the diversity office. Because again, there's a limit to, I think, what the ombudsman's office can realistically handle, and we need to be cognizant of that as we move along. So my thinking is that it's good that he's raised the interlink and his proposal, but we need to go back to our groups and to have further conversations, and as we develop our recommendations, then see how this fit in. Unfortunately, it may not necessarily fit in with the ongoing review of the Ombudsman's office, so our recommendations may end up being an additional document to the Ombudsman's office on what we recommend, and I think it's important that we are cognizant of that. Thank you.
Very good point, Fiona. Nils was also in the queue.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. traffic jams are often formed simply by cars slowing down and speeding up. And weirdly enough, it doesn't need cars to stop to grind the whole system to a halt. So maybe there is a lesson that we can take from there, that we might need, we have spent considerable time together in this process that has created bonds and understanding and trust. And one example of that was when there was the potential interlinkage of issues between the transparency group and the human rights group. After a good conversation between the co-rapporteurs of the transparency group and our group, we managed to bilaterally find out this is not necessarily an issue. We'll discuss it in our groups, and if it's an issue, we'll bring it back to the plenary and we'll discuss it. That worked perfectly fine. So I'm not sure whether there is a need of processification of this and whether we can be pragmatic. Another example of that is, I think, the excellent work that's been done by the small group on the Trinity. So we see that there is a recurring problem. We address it in the plenary, and ad hoc we go along. I think Workstream 2 doesn't need necessarily more process. Thank you.
Oh, no. Definitely not. I think we're sufficiently structured like this. Sebastian, would you like to share your thoughts, and then I'll try to wrap this up with a few conclusions?
Thank you, Mathieu. Yeah, I don't think that we are adding processes. I just wanted to raise that those issues will come, and it's maybe better to have that in mind within each of the subgroup and nothing else. If you don't think that there are anything to be taken into account in your subgroup with new mechanisms that could be sent one way or another to one of the complaints office, that's okay. I am not requesting that you find something specifically, but I just wanted to be sure that we don't stay with just the mind of we have the ombuds and that's the only place to go if we have new mechanism, and we want to that to be independent from staff, and that's to go to the ombudsman, or if it could be dependent to staff, it could be to the complaints office. But there could be another way to do it, but it's not yet the time to decide if it's needed or not. The question of the diversity, yeah, maybe part could go to the ombuds, but maybe all need to go somewhere else, and that will be a good time to discuss it when you will be done. But what I wanted to raise is that I don't want each group to try to find their own solution for this new mechanism. It's why I try to raise this issue to the plenary with a draft document. Thank you.
Thank you, Sébastien. I think it's very valuable that we have early conversations about these connections between the subgroups, because it helps everyone broaden their views on the topic, and we know that it's the way to handle this is not by adding more structure, process, or conditions, but rather by taking into account a broader perspective from the subgroups down to the plenary. And so we are now aware. I think the key recommendation, but that's valid recommendations for any subgroup, whether or not there is this issue, is to start with requirements before actually designing the mechanisms or solutions. And that's always going to be helpful if we have to coordinate things later. So I think this is well taken into account already in the various groups we've discussed, whether it's diversity, transparency. We've been moving sometimes upwards to the requirements when needed, and that's what is going to help us later on. And then at the plenary level, I think your Your point has come across, Sebastian, very well. We know we need to be aware of this part of any recommendation, that there might be some things to refine in terms of consistency at the end. But we'll handle this on an ad hoc approach and certainly not by adding extra layers of process. That's my takeaway of this very useful conversation. And thank you again, Sebastian, for raising the point, putting this, documenting it to the plenary. And it's certainly useful moving forward, and it will help us conclude faster once the various subgroups are ready. Thanks, Sebastian.
Thank you.
And we're now turning to the first reading of ASO-AC accountability, and Thomas is going to be the co-chair for this one.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. And Cheryl and Steve are already coming to the tabletop, but let's not forget that Fazané is also a co-rapporteur for this sub-team. Unfortunately, she can't be with us today because of reasons that you all know. But I'm not sure whether Fazi is actually in the remote participation room, but we would like to greet her wholeheartedly and hope that she's with us next time around for the next meeting. So the idea for this session is, and actually we do have a full hour, for Cheryl and Steve to present the state of play with the paper. Then we're going to have a discussion on the document, hopefully be able to conclude successfully the first reading. And if all goes well, we would like to carve out like 15 minutes of this session to have a little bit of time to discuss for our prepare for our discussion with Joran, which is going to take place after the lunch break. Because as you know, we had a couple of items identified earlier this morning where we thought we could do well with Joran's input, and we would like to structure our discussion with him a little bit more with the whole group. And so now, without further ado, let me turn it over to Cheryl. I think, Cheryl, you're going to be first, right?
Thank you. Cheryl Langdonor for the record, and I do like to get the first and often the last word in, so good for you to pass it on to me. I do want to recognise, however, as Thomas mentioned, that Fazané, our co-rapporteur, was unable to attend this meeting for travel difficulty issues, but she has been an incredibly important contributor and drafter to a large proportion of the text of the document that we're presenting to you today as a first reading for the full cross-community working group. Our Workstream 2 topic is one of looking at the support organisation and advisory committee accountability. And we have, as of, I think it was only almost 10 days ago now, released a final report, which I would like to think that you've all read and have digested and perhaps know various pages verbatim. Well, some of us are saying, yes, that's great. But what Steve is going to do is take us through the high points and the holidays of this, we'd like to have a discussion and some feedback from you to call this a first formal reading, open for edits and suggestions, obviously, but a first formal reading for our final draft recommendation. We had... by our last report to the full cross-community working group, progressed to what we thought of as about the 40-45% completion of our work. With this first reading, we would see our work progressing into the 60-plus percent ranking. But obviously that won't be reflected in the dashboard until the end of the month reporting. So with that, let's have the next slide, and I'm going to hand over to Steve.
Thanks, Cheryl. Steve DelBianco here, one of the co-rapporteurs for the SOAC Accountability Group. And we distributed the report, as Cheryl said, a week ago. It's about 33 pages, but two-thirds of that is our recap of the responses received from the ACs and SOs with respect to their own accountability, transparency, participation mechanisms. So roughly a third of it is captured in the recommendations on three different tracks that we put together, three tracks that correspond with the mandate that showed up in the ICANN bylaws for Workstream 2 on SOAC accountability. Those three elements are summarized on the screen here in front of you.
describing what it is we set out to do from the bylaws. The genesis of this, though, is worth a little bit of exploration. Very early on in the CCWG for accountability transition, we made the point over and over again that the point of this transition was to use the IANA contract as leverage to hold the corporation accountable to the community. And it was in those conversations at a point when I do believe there was some conflict about what we were doing and why we were doing it, there was reaction from ICANN staff, from ICANN board members, from our independent experts, and in fact many of the people in this room, who said, yes, the community should hold ICANN, the corporation, accountable, but who's holding the community accountable? And for a number of us, we said, well, we didn't quite get that. How do you hold the community accountable to the community? But what was really meant was that the individual SOs and ACs, which were created by the ICANN bylaws for the most part, how are they accountable? And to whom are they accountable? And that was expressed many times by independent experts. Jan Scholte is here today. I remember him asking the question at the Frankfurt meeting, who watches the watchers, for instance? And then Willie Curry, our other independent expert, contributed some vision on that as well. And that led to a Workstream 2, not a Workstream 1, since it wasn't critical for the transition, a Workstream 2 project to look at this accountability. And that's really the first item you see on the slide. There were two other things that were thrown in. Willie Curry, in May of 2015, submitted an item to the list describing a notion of a mutual accountability roundtable, and that became track two of us, and that got thrown in here for this project. And the third was, as the IRP was being developed with respect to holding the corporation accountable for actions and inaction, the theme of who holds the ACs and ASOs accountable came up, and the question was put to us to assess whether the IRP itself should be made applicable to the activities within an AC and an SO. So next slide, please. The draft report that we've got in front of you then has three tracks, and most of the document is on track one. For track one, we didn't look just at the ACs and SOs, but also the several subgroups that exist within the GNSO. And let's first thank all of you in the room who, starting last November, began to respond in great detail to a questionnaire that we put out. Then the questionnaire probed the areas with respect to accountability, transparency, participation. We know that we could tap into the websites for the ALAC or the website for the BC, but it was also instructive to have those groups respond, pointing us to not only things that we may have missed, but unwritten procedures and rules that they were able to disclose. And so we thank you for that response. And in reaction, the document you have recommends best practices in these particular five areas. And before I turn to an example of two of the best practices, I wanted to summarize that with accountability, the most important question was asking the ACs and SOs to whom they are accountable. And on that, our work group and each of the ACs and SOs had clear consensus that an entity that was created in the ICANN bylaws to serve the interests of, say, country code managers is accountable to country code TLD managers, right? A group like the GNSO, is for the generic names supporting organization, is accountable to the communities described in the generic names, the users, the registrants, the various parties that support what happens in the GTLD space. So there was no illusion here that the GNSO is somehow accountable to the greater internet community. It is accountable to all users and registrants of GTLDs. The CCNSO is accountable to users and registrants and managers of the CCTLDs. ALAC, GAC, each of the groups was created to serve a designated or target community, and that accountability starts and stops there. Now, if the CCNSO ends up pushing for policies that undermine the global public interest, there are opportunities as those policies are implemented for the ICANN board to assess whether it serves the global public interest. And the rest of the global public interest outside of the CC community has every opportunity to do input there. But we cleared up a lot of confusion about who's accountable to whom. And that ended up having a lot of influence on the conclusion we reached, which was not to do a mutual accountability roundtable by which GAC was accountable to CCNSO or GNSO or anyone else. We talked about transparency, however, being transparent to everyone, not just transparent to the community you were designated to serve. I think that's pretty obvious. Participation by whom? Well, participation in a given group like ALAC is open to the members of the designated community they were targeted to serve. And yet, only some parts of the designated community will choose to join. Not every business, registrant in the entire planet joined the business constituency yet. And while they have...
You're working on it.
Right. While they're part of the target community, yeah. They are not yet members. So the question is, how do we encourage and facilitate participation by members? And then the next step on here was outreach, because there are certainly businesses that don't yet belong to the BC. So we asked about how is the outreach working to reach out to other members of the community that you're supposed to serve but who do not yet participate. So that outreach is not outreach to the global public interest. It's outreach to your designated community members who are not yet participating. And then finally we asked about how fresh are each of us in the ACs and SOs and subgroup, how fresh are we keeping our documentation, our charter, and other documents. Next slide, please. Thank you. Let me just summarize. There are 25 best practice recommendations on track one, 25 of them, and they're summarized in our document. The easiest place to look at that is the table we put together on all of that, which is beginning on page 6 and goes through page 7. I'll just highlight 5 of the recommendations and best practices. There's a caveat on the best practice recommendations because we suggest that each AC and SO and subgroup consider adopting the following best practices, where applicable, to your structure and purpose. So consider adopting where it's applicable. This is the time to indicate that nothing in our group is making a recommendation of changes to the ICANN bylaws in any of the three tracks, and we're not suggesting that these best practices on page 6 and 7 be enshrined in the bylaws anywhere. The best practices are by nature aspirational, and in many cases they're not even applicable to certain groups. Where they are applicable, our recommendation would be for the groups to consider adopting them. So, for instance, under accountability, there's a recommendation that each of the ACs and subgroup publish an annual report to the public about what they've done in the previous year to improve on their accountability. What initiatives did they take, for instance, to adopt some of the best practices, and whether there are plans in the future. That would be a new item. It's not done today. Under transparencies, this was important, too. We gathered all the information and learned that many groups open all their meetings, but most will close some of their meetings, whether that meeting is a conference call facilitated through Adobe or an in-person meeting at an ICANN gathering. So we simply are suggesting for the purpose of transparency that ordinarily your meeting should be open to public, but when you determine that it's only open to your members, that you should explain that is the case and explain why. Not a long explanation, but make sure that an observer who looks at ICANN and suddenly notices that the business constituency is holding a closed meeting. Why is it closed? Well, it's closed because we're going to conduct a debate with respect to policy recommendations, or we're going to do elections or charter. A simple explanation would explain why not everything that each of you do is totally transparent. On participation, again, participation is among the target community. We believe that when you have to ask people to apply to be a member of your group, and you examine their credentials to see if they're part of the target community and whether they can join, that there should be a process of appeal. If a member of the community wants to be a participant and for some reason has been rejected, they ought to have an ability to appeal. On outreach, that we think that each group should have a strategy for outreach to members of the target community who don't yet participate. I think that makes entirely good sense. And then finally, we took a look at the updates that each of us have done with respect to our charter, our policies and procedures. And for many of us, in the BC especially, it drags on for multiple years. And we are recommending as a best practice to try to do your internal reviews of policies and procedures within a year. And if it looks as if it's going to drag out, maybe you should consider adopting some temporary measures about which you have consensus before you drag on into the longer review. So thank you for that. And I think if you'll allow us, we'll quickly go through and then return to each track and take questions. So I think that might be easier because Thomas wanted us to try to make sure we get this done in 15 minutes.
Just before you continue, Steve, I guess that's the way we're going to try adopt the document also. So once you went through it presenting everything, then we're going to slice it into the various segments and ask for objections or comments, right?
All right. That'll be great. So let's move to the next slide. which discusses track two. Now, track two was our charge to us in the bylaws to evaluate and potentially suggest implementation of mutual accountability roundtable. So that was a phrase introduced in May of 2015 by Willie Curry, one of our CCWG advisors. The entire content of what Willie recommended is in our track two. It might be page 32 or 33. Page 31, actually. So Willie started by suggesting that the idea of mutual accountability is that multiple actors are accountable to each other, and goes on to describe a notion by which the ACs and SOs answer to each other, not just to their target community or the global public interest. It goes on to indicate that part of the way it would work is to convene meetings at the ICANN meetings and to share a lot of best practices of what worked and didn't work. So there's a notion of accountability and there's a notion of best practices. So what we did was said the best practices are what we've captured in track one. And we did not recommend that ACs and SOs are accountable to each other on a peer-to-peer basis, but they're in fact accountable to the targeted communities, and that the sharing is beneficial and can be done informally. We tried to formalize it by coming up with best practices as track one, and we concluded there was no need to implement new processes, new meetings, new structures for a mutual accountability roundtable. So I'll be anxious to hear the reaction from you here today during first reading on that conclusion. And then finally, on track three, next slide, thank you. Track three was the question put to us, is should our new and enhanced judicial system, the independent review process, should it also be made applicable to the ACs and SOs? So for instance, in the GNSO, if we had an action or inaction that wasn't in keeping with our charter, would the IRP allow any aggrieved party to invoke an independent review process with all of the, I would call it, heavyweight structures that go with it? Now, our recommendation on this was pretty clear, that when we looked at the IRP as written today, and David and Becky are both here as part of the group that's doing the implementation oversight of IRP, we said that it would not be applicable to SO and AC activities the way it's described in the bylaws and the way in which the IOT is laid it out. And we did some interaction with that team on IOT before we reached these conclusions. So it would not be applicable as written today. Well, could it be? Well, yes. I mean, enough lawyers could probably come together and describe in the bylaws how the IRP also could be made applicable to the GNSO, the ALAC, or the GAC. But we concluded, I think it was a very clear consensus, that it should not be made applicable to SO and AC activities. It is in the IRP very complex and expensive, and there are easier ways to challenge an AC or SO on the basis of its actions or inactions with regard to its targeted community, its charter, its policies, procedures, and in general, the ICANN bylaws, to the extent they speak to the activities of GNSO and GAC and others. One of those easier processes would potentially be the complaints officer. And we talked about this with Sebastian many times, as we felt like the ombudsman has been and should continue to be a place where you take a complaint about something that's happening within the BC or within the GNSO. And we've had interactions with the ombudsman before. That would conclude, I believe, what we would summarize for the three tracks. And we have the entire document available as an Adobe display. And Thomas, I think it would be a great time for us to begin to take a cue at this, our first reading of our draft report.
Thanks very much, Cheryl and Steve. And you guys did an awesome job with this document. I see a lot of hands are raised already, but let's please follow the structure that we've proposed a little bit earlier. So let's hear comments on track one first, and then we'll move to the next tracks afterwards. And for those who want the full text of the recommendations, again, as Steve mentioned earlier, you had the full report and the reading pack that Bernie recirculated last Friday, I think it was, and the recommendations start on page 6 of this document. So please go there to read all the recommendations. And let's now start hearing comments or questions with respect to track one. Can I ask for the person managing the Adobe, I'm not sure who that is, from staff, to go back to the slide speaking to track one. That's two slides back. And let's now hear I think Tijani is first. Tijani, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this subgroup, for this report. I think it is a lot of work done, and I really appreciate. I have a question about the accountability of the GNSO. Are the registrant part of the designated community for the GNSO accountability?
Steve Del Bianco responding. And staff, could you put up slide two, which is the very first slide on track one? Thank you for the question, Tijani. We didn't try to invent anything here. We went, if you look at page four of our document, we went to the ICANN bylaws where each and every the ACNSO is described. So the GNSO is, quote, open to registries, registrars, commercial stakeholders, and non-commercial stakeholders. Now, in the commercial and non-commercial stakeholders, registrants of domain names and users are part of the non-commercial and commercial groups within GNSO, as distinct from the other side of the house in GNSO, which are the contracted parties that serve the domain, the registrars and registries. So we took all of this right from the bylaws and presented that back to each of you and asked, would you affirm or expand upon whether you see yourself serving the community that the bylaws say that you serve? Next question.
Next is Malcolm, please.
Thank you, and thank you for a very useful and well-considered document. I had one specific question related to the recommendations on, I think it's called participation, which specifically the one that's talked about having an appeals mechanism, recommending an appeals mechanism if somebody were to apply. Can you please clarify that this is intended to be a appeal against the application of the eligibility criteria in a particular case, and in no way provides a mechanism to appeal against the eligibility criteria themselves?
Yes.
Thank you. Can we have that clearly documented? Thank you.
I guess we can, Malcolm. Thanks for the question. Next is Cavus.
Thank you very much, and thanks to the three co-chairs for the devotion and hard work they have done. I have one question, but before raising that question, I ask another question, and that is, according to the report, there is no proposal to modify the bylaw. So I think that is clear in the group. Where you want to put this recommendation? Where it goes? Once you reply to that, then I have another subsidiary question to make. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve Del Bianco. Cavus, as a member, a very active member of the group, you were aware and relieved that we weren't making any recommendations for bylaws changes. So I think the nature of your question is, should our report say the words, we are not making recommendations for bylaws changes? You're asking whether we should put those words in here.
And where?
Fine. If so, I'd be happy to put them in. I suppose they would go in the executive summary.
Thanks. Next is Fiona.
Thank you, Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was a follow-up? Cavus had a follow-up, so Fiona will get back to you in a moment.
I apologize. In fact, I follow up that. Okay, you
Cavus,
put it in the summary or executive summary.
Sorry, Cavus, it's already in there. It's in the third paragraph.
It
says, we are not making recommendations.
Yeah.
Any changes to ICANN bylaws to reflect the best practices. So it's in the third paragraph.
Yes, I have seen that. I am asking that when you put in the executive summary, what would be the course of action they will be followed by the SO and AC? Would be something that SO and AC are seriously, encouraged to do this and that? That is my follow-up question. A lot of the work has been done. There is a need to have some sort of follow-up actions. Optional or some, semi-optional, non-mandatory, so on and so forth. That is the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Steve Del Bianco. In that same paragraph, the sentence before, the action is, in track one, we recommend best practices that should be considered by each AC, SO, and subgroup to the extent the practices are applicable. So the words should be considered by are the action words to the ACs and SOs that we're serving. Do we need to be any more explicit than that?
Yes, we need. I don't think that this will fly later on after this executive summary. There should be some sort of action somewhere in the scope of activities of each SO and AC saying that this group has developed 25 recommendations and you are urged or encouraged or requested or invited to take necessary action with respect to the recommendation that relates to your activity, and if you find any difficulty to their implementation, to take also any follow-up action. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. I see nodding at the table. Fiona is next.
Thank you, Thomas. Just before I go, Jan has been trying to raise his hand, but his machine has issues. Can he please speak before I do? Thank you.
Jan Scholter, I was actually second in the queue, and then I got disconnected, and my name was dropped from the queue. So we
didn't successfully manage to suppress your views?
You try very hard, yes.
Please go ahead, Jan.
Thank you. Well, I mean, as being a bit responsible for creating all this work for people, I want to just thank the group for everything they've done. It's a really good report, and if I make a few criticisms, it's in huge respect for what you've done. It's great to see that this has been integrated into the sort of normal thinking of the accountability issues here. One issue, just a clarification, maybe when in the final report, to clarify always what the units are that are being accountable. It says here ACs, SOs, and subgroups. But maybe is it ever the subgroups of ALAC in terms of the RALOs? What is particularly the status of GAC in all of this? Because it's a little bit fudged over. So maybe a little bit more clarification of exactly who the units are that this is addressed to. I think there are other issues of transparency that could be raised, but maybe I can put those to you offline. Participation and the outreach overlaps with the diversity work, I would have thought, in some ways, and I wonder if there can be a cross reference or at least some mention that the outreach is done with a kind of diversity sensitivity in mind in terms of regions, gender, whatever the work that Fiona's group is doing. The form of the annual report, is it going to be a template, is it going to be a format of some kind, who writes it, how is it published? I suppose there's some details of that get worked out later on. Internal reviews of policies and procedures, that's one place actually where I think, anticipating in a moment, maybe it wouldn't be a mutual accountability roundtable, but I would have thought that some kind of regularized interaction between communities would be useful there. I mean, when you're reviewing policies and procedures, then it would be quite useful to know what other groups are doing and have comparisons and learn from each other. Maybe it doesn't have to be formalized as a mutual accountability roundtable, but it's some kind of formalized discussion I would have thought could be useful. You anticipated my question a little bit when you say that the IRP is not necessary. Oh, no, that's a later issue. Then one final issue on implementation. Have you got some ideas, and should there be anything in the report about how you're going to ensure that this is followed up and implemented? Does it want an ICANN staff person or team or something that's going to have this as their brief to oversee, make sure it happens? How do we make sure that it happens, indeed? That's left a little bit open at the moment. But a great report and lots of really good ideas. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Steve Del Bianco. You're the catalyst, I think, for this. So it's only appropriate that at this point you try to hold us to be specific. With respect to this first question was about subgroups. I earlier described what the bylaws say about subgroups and GNSO, commercial and non-commercial stakeholders. So where the bylaws describe subgroups, we strongly encourage the ACs and SOs to distribute to the subgroups, and hopefully they would respond, and they all did in GNSO. the bylaws of ICANN describe the at-large community. You asked about ALAC and regionals. When the ICANN bylaws describe ALAC, it suggests that ALAC is the primary organizational home within ICANN for individual internet users. But when we sent to ALAC the questionnaire with an invitation to distribute to subgroups, ALAC didn't distribute, or if they did, they didn't get individual responses from the regional operations within there. So we relied upon the ACs and SOs, as described in the bylaws, to relay our questionnaire to the underlying subgroups where applicable. So we left that to the community itself. Your second question was whether outreach should include diversity, and it would be our view that that is up to the ACs and SOs. I can tell you that the outreach in the business constituency isn't about gender or racial diversity. It's about making sure we have representation in the BC from business users and registrants from around the world. We end up very heavily focused on global reach of our targeted community, and we strive to achieve diversity when we elect officers, for instance. We have rules about geographic representation. We are always anxious to achieve gender or racial or other forms of diversity when we elect officers. But there isn't, to my knowledge, written policies and procedures on those kinds of diversity that have been baked in to the outreach activities. So, Jan, I'll invite you to scrutinize the outreach section of best practices. And I think what you're recommending is that we try to take an overlay from the diversity group and put it on top of here. We'll take that under advisement, but I need to see what diversity is coming up with. You also asked about an annual report format, and I don't think our group was going to prescribe what an annual report should look like. In fact, one best practice would be that as a group comes up with an annual report, other ACs and SOs may wish to follow it. And then you asked about internal review of policies and procedures. Good news, that's already done. When the BC Charter was put out for public comment, we did collect 5 comments. And the comment period, Jan, is open to everyone who wants to submit the comment. And then staff summarizes those and puts those to the board and back to the BC, where we have already come up with a written response to that. So when a group does a review of itself and proposes changes, those changes are put out for public comment. And finally, you said to ensure implementation. So let me be clear. We are only asking that the ACs and SOs consider adopting best practices where they're applicable to their particular group. There is no mandate in here. If there were a mandate, we'd be looking at bylaws changes. Cavus indicated we ought to do more than just ask them to consider. We should urge them to consider adopting. And yes, Cavus, we'll put the word, urge them to consider adopting. But for you to suggest we are going to ensure implementation, the only thing we would want to ensure is that the best practices have been considered. And I don't know how to make sure that we do that. There is no mandate that each of the 25 best practices be adopted by each and every ACSO and subgroup. If that's something that all of you in the plenary want us to do, you'll have to make that signal loud and clear, because it's not part of our draft one recommendation.
Thanks very much, Fiona. Thanks for allowing Jan to speak first, and now it's your turn.
Thank you very much. Fiona Sunga for the record. On the issues of participation and outreach, as you're finalizing on your report, I think it's going to be important for us to have a conversation on this part of your report and the impact on the diversity mechanisms, because I think we may need to add to it aspects of diversity. So I'd like to welcome the team from the from your group to come and join us. Cheryl has been involved and she's been very active, but I think she needs to speak out stronger and louder on participation and outreach and diversity, because that helps us to be able to have a Workstream 2 report that is balanced and able to effectively address the mechanisms you want to put in place for accountability. Thank you.
Thanks, Fiona. Michael?
Hi, Michael Karaniklis for the record. Just to comment on the transparency standard, you mentioned that meetings should normally be open and that if they're not open, reasons should be provided for that. It strikes me that that's kind of a soft standard, which allows for quite a lot of flexibility. And I wanted to ask if you've considered developing a defined list of reasons for why it might be acceptable to have closed meetings in order to provide clearer guidance for when that would and would not be acceptable. And I think that does tie a little bit into the previous discussion on promoting implementation, because clarity can be critical to that.
Michael, thank you. We were looking forward to some feedback on transparency. The answer was no, we did not consider a list of specific reasons that a AC or an SO, such as the GAC, would be allowed to go to a closed meeting. If you're aware of a list like that, I could see potentially making it a best practice. But as we discussed with Jan earlier, there is no implementation other than ACs and SOs are invited to consider, urged to consider adopting best practices. We aren't making any bylaws recommendations here, so there wouldn't be an ensuring the implementation so that the GAC could only close the meeting if they picked one of the four designated reasons. But I would welcome your advice and expertise on transparency about what you think are typically the best reasons to move to a meeting to be closed to membership as opposed to open to the global world. And we'd be happy to put that in as potentially an example list under the best practices. But it would not be you may only close a reason. You may only close a meeting for the following seven reasons. Our mandate and our recommendations are not to that level of prescriptive specificity.
Thanks very much. Actually, I'm going to close the queue after myself. I have a comment to make as well, so I put myself at the end of the queue. John, David, and then myself.
John Curran here. Excellent document, by the way, by the team. I tried to minimize my contributions to it because I tend to slow things down. But I just want to say it's just remarkable work. One little thing that may come up in here. It's important to identify the best practices and, in fact, the work of the entire subgroup as within the context of ICANN. And that may be obvious because that's what we're talking about, but ICANN interacts with a lot of different organizations, some of which are wholly within ICANN and some of which are wholly external and some of which straddle the line. The IETF, for example, isn't covered by this, but interacts with ICANN but lives entirely outside. So the best practices aren't applicable. They have their own practices that are developed by their community, by their method. Most of the organizations involved in the DNS constituencies are wholly within ICANN. The number community, the ASO, our global activities are within the ICANN scope, and our regional activities are without. And so it just might be helpful for clarity to define that these are within the scope of ICANN's activities, because some organizations do have activities that are within and external to ICANN.
Hey, thank you, John. Steve Del Bianco. Groups from ASO and the root server community made those points early on. And in fact, the bylaws make it clear that ASO is the entity established by the MOU between ICANN and the number resource organizations, which is an organization of existing RIRs. So sure enough, in a few cases, like the ASO, there's an outside organization that was invited to bring its participation into ICANN. So it's only that participation within ICANN that we are speaking to here. So let's take that on board and add something to clarify that. Thank you, John.
Thanks very much. David?
Thank you, Thomas. David McCauley for the record. I would simply like to add a voice to resist the idea of changing the word recommend these activities to the SOs and the ACs and their subgroups, and not change it to urge. If you use the word urge, you're going to characterize folks as outside of an area of responsibility if they don't adopt these. These are sophisticated organizations that are mature and responsible participants in the community, and I think they should have the chance to consider them as opposed to being pushed into that corner. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Even if we urged, the thing you'd be urging is to urge to consider, not urge to adopt and implement. So I think that, and that was Cavus who brought up, urge to consider, recommend that they consider. And currently, you're right, we have recommend, and I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Since we haven't heard Finn today, I'm glad to let you speak, although the queue had been closed. Please, Finn.
Thank you. I will not be long. It was only a question. First of all, it's an excellent document and a good recommendation. But reading through the best practices on transparency 0.5, which talks about minutes from meetings, and reading participation 0.4, I think there is some overlap there. Could you explain it? Could it be simplified in 0.4 in transparency? Everything should be published in or 0.5 in participation. 0.4, it is subject to confidentiality. And you talk about membership meetings and all meetings. So could it be simplified, or have I missed something? Thank you.
Thank you, Finn. I think we'll try to clarify that transparency item 4 and participation item 4 are speaking about the very same meetings, membership meetings. They're speaking about both of them, and they should both have the qualifier subject to exceptions for confidential matters. We did learn that, for the most part, ACs and SOs publish summary minutes of their meetings, and those minutes are published on open email lists. But each group has a different level of how it summarizes and whether it gets into the details of debate and confidential matters. We'll make those consistent. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And as promised, I will also make a quick comment, or it's rather a question. Looking at the participation criteria, has the group considered to speak to the question of membership fees to participate in certain groups? Because it would be relatively easy for a certain group to raise membership fees to a level that would de facto exclude a lot of players around the globe. So I'm not sure whether that's a question for this group or whether it's rather a diversity question, but still I think in order to be open and globally inclusive, that might at least be worth considering, wouldn't it?
We did not consider that, nor was it raised in any of the input. So if you want to add it to our mandate, well, then fine. It's a question that I guess the community needs to be aware of, because it would be, as many things can be, a barrier to open and general participation from the designated community. And it is a matter of the ACs and the SOs being in service and being accountable to their designated community here. I can imagine, hypothetically, that a designated community may in fact not have a problem with a fee-based structure. It's kind of their business. But it wasn't something that we discussed, and it wasn't something that we've drawn any recommendations on.
I could see us recommending that membership fees, to the extent they are used, should be kept as low as possible to encourage participation, and having that be a best practice recommendation.
Yeah. Could do that. So I guess in summary, on the feedback that we heard on track one, we still have track two and three to discuss. There was nothing in there that would really bag a rewrite or overhaul of the whole document. So I would suggest that, you know, unless there is objection, last-minute objection, that we take this as approved for first reading, and that the refinements that were specified here, such as the encouragement to consider or urge to consider, that's for the second reading. So I think on track one, we're good to go. Let's now hear whether there is any feedback with respect to track two, and for that I'd like staff to move to the next slide, please. Is there any feedback on track two? We heard Steve explaining why or how the idea of the mutual accountability roundtable has been discussed, and he's offered a rationale for why this was not considered to be formalized as a recommendation. So we have Jordan, Seb, and then Jan.
Thanks, Thomas. Jordan Carter here, DonNZ. I think with this concept, it's maybe a shame that it was put within the SOAC accountability work, because I understand the kind of principal agent logic that you've used as the rationale for your recommendation. But in terms of improving ICANN's overall accountability as a system, the thing I thought that this would bring as a concept is permission to have a particular kind of conversation. Sure, there are SOAC leadership groups, but it's always a little bit dangerous or tentative to say, hey, did you really end up doing that as well as you could have done? Or did you think about this when you don't have permission to do it? So I don't really know where I'm going with that comment, other than to say that, you know, I heard some feedback from people saying this would be a shooting circle for SOs and ACs or the board, or, you know, this would be a whinge fest or something that wasn't constructive. I guess we'll know that ICANN is maturing and succeeding as an organization with an open, healthy culture when these conversations are happening. If this isn't the way to do it, I think it's still something either us as a group or the next ATRT review ought to be thinking about. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Next is Sebastian.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't participate enough in this subgroup, unfortunately, but I was agreed to publish the document as it is. But at the same time, I think this question about not having a mutual accountability roundtable of whatever organization possible to have exchange between the different silos is a missing part in our work. But I hope it's not the end of the story, and we will be able to get those discussions somewhere back in this place or in ATRT one day, doesn't matter. But I really think that we can't have a structure, an organization with just accountability within our own silos. What is happening in the other, it's also important. I guess for each part, it's important what is happening in the other part, because we form all together one single structure organization. And it's why I think something to allow a mutual understanding, mutual accountability, and to raise transparency and awareness will be useful in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. I see the queue is getting longer and longer, and we have limited time. So can I ask you to be brief and maybe focus on criticism? So, you know, if you just have comments that would not hold up the train for approving the first reading of the report, then, you know, we better keep it very brief. Next is Jan, please.
Yeah, Jan Scholte, much in the same vein as Jordan and Sebastian. My particular take might be that we have this cross-community working group on accountability, and in a sense we've been having a mutual accountability discussion in this CCWG over the last 2 years. This group is not going to continue. And let's think about how much we've learned. I go back to the Frankfurt meeting, and we didn't even have a definition of accountability. Look where we are now, how much we've learned through this whole process. If we don't replace this CCWG accountability with something that is an ongoing cross-community conversation, then we lose all of the things that we've been learning over these last 2 years. So I'm not sure how to do it, and maybe this particular roundtable idea is not quite the way to do it. I don't know. But the idea of saying we don't continue some kind of institutionalized conversation across communities seems to me an awful loss of an opportunity. Thanks.
Jan, let me thank you for that. And in the chat, what I indicated as well is that on page 2 of our document, in our mandate discussion, we point out that recommendation 10 of the CCWG final report tries to suggest ways in which this work will continue. And let me give you two examples. The first is that in work stream 1, we included the reviews of SO and AC accountability mechanisms as part of the independent structural reviews. Now, the bylaws require ICANN's board to find an independent reviewer every 5 years to review each and every AC and SO as to its effectiveness as an organization. And that's every AC and SO except the GAC, by the way. And I know the GNSO has just gone through one of them. I believe that the board dictates what the terms of reference are for those independent reviews. So the board could easily suggest that the reviews include an assessment of accountability, transparency, participation, and outreach, and could even suggest that the best practices developed here be part of the basis in which you independently review each and every AC and SO. That is one mechanism for it, the structural reviews. The second is the ATRTs, which occur no less frequently than every 5 years. They're organization-wide. They're not just focused in on one AC and SO, but you would be the second person then that suggested that the ATRT be given an opportunity to hook into these best practices when it examines the degree to which the ACs and SOs are being transparent and open and accountable. So we can make both of those recommendations more explicitly here, so that the independent reviews every 5 years and the ATRT every 5 years.
No, that's great, but neither of those involves a cross-community conversation and a cross-community...
The ATRT does.
If you think that's enough.
I can really understand why Jan doesn't want this group to be dissolved at some point, you know. We are having so much fun, aren't we? Cavus is next.
Thank you. I think we have discussed it at the level of the group, and I have suggested that since we do not favor or support to have mutual round table accountability, perhaps the second or last part of the text can be done formally, could be modified, that can be done to, and then we say this one, holding e.g. some annual meeting between the leadership of SO and AC for exchange of information with respect to the implementation of these recommendations. I think it is good to take account of this, not leave it aside of that. If someone has a problem, they get it together, the leadership only, every year or whatever period they decide, but I think a little bit more than informally. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. And as I have asked the colleagues from the floor to be brief, can I also ask that the responses be brief? Shall we take the next question first? Okay. So next is Alan, then Greg, then Malcolm, and after that we're going to close the queue.
Thank you. I'm responding to Jordan and Jan. I'm one of the people, I'm on this group, and I am active. I'm one of the people who supported the Mutual Accountability Roundtable. I thought it was a potentially useful exercise. At Large is just in the process of having the draft of its review published after having an earlier draft published. A review, that report, that is heavily based on comments received by the reviewers, very negative comments, not necessarily accurate comments. And to watch the absolute joy of other parts of the community rubbing their hands to see the knife being put to us, I don't think we're quite ready and mature enough to do this. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think it's unfortunate that perhaps the focus on mutual accountability got kind of mixed up with the concept of the Mutual Accountability Roundtable, which felt like a circular firing squad, and therefore not one that most people would cotton to as a recommendation. But I do think that mutual accountability as a concept shouldn't be dismissed, and I'm concerned that the first bullet point that says that each ACSO is accountable to its designated community and not to other ACs or SOs or to the larger community or to the Trinity or the global internet community, I think is stating the question too narrowly, and I say that as someone who serves in leadership capacity in a community and thus realize that, you know, it would be very enjoyable to be bulletproof from all other organizations other than my own designated community. So perhaps this is an admission against interest. But in any case, I think it's important. Perhaps we do need to reconsider that first bullet, maybe to say that they're primarily accountable to their designated community and only secondarily, but also to ACs or SOs that. And I think there needs to be an opportunity somehow, whether we're mature enough or not, to have that kind of mutual conversation or bilateral direct conversation and to try to figure out how to do it. The roundtable seems like it wasn't that way. But what would be that way for there to be some constructive discussion and even perhaps criticism of different organizations? And I, in addition to the various types of reviews, ATRT and structural reviews, which allow for a sort of intermediated discussion or which has its advantages too. But I think some way to actually have active mutual accountability aside from a roundtable is something we need to explore further. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Steve Del Bianco. This bullet is on this slide as part of the rationale for why we said an MAR was not to be done. So that bullet language is not in the recommendation. What is in the recommendation on page 4 is, quote, "This does not imply that each SO and AC make its decisions without regard to the broader Internet community, outside of its designated community. Rather, the global public interest is a fundamental consideration of the ICANN board in approving and implementing advice and policy recommendations that come out of an AC and SO." So that is our formal statement, and what you're pointing out with regard to a bullet is a fair criticism. It's definitely my shorthand to try to suggest how that accountability discussion factored in to the decision not to recommend a formal new process for mutual accountability roundtable. And if you have creative ideas about how we could recommend doing it, we would be happy to incorporate them in our second reading, third reading, but we need to get moving because we're now on this page on mutual accountability roundtable. We are not recommending anything formal. And if you're advocating that we do recommend something formal, we'll have to understand what that is, put it back to the working group, and try to put some meat on those bones.
Just briefly, decisions, I think, are only one aspect of what a ACSO does, and probably those that are least open to criticism, perhaps, by other ACSOs, because that is where you're probably most accountable to your own community for why you've made a decision. But I'm thinking more about processes, fairness for membership, sorts of things other than kind of formal policy-oriented decisions, I think, is where the mutual accountability is most needed, and then not on the decision point. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's move to Malcolm. Malcolm.
Thank you. The ICANN community as a whole clearly has an interest as a whole in that each of its constituent parts are effective and functioning properly and adequately representing the parts of the community and the stakeholders that they're designed to, so as to ensure that all relevant stakeholders that have an interest in ICANN's activities have a chance to be heard. But ensuring that that thing works as a whole seems to me to be a high-level activity that is properly the purview of all entities like the ATRT. Moving beyond that to have a more direct and ongoing mutual accountability session where bodies that are meant to represent broader stakeholders are actually speaking more directly to each other, in my view, risks turning us inward, away from the communities that we seek to represent, and therefore undermining, actually, ICANN's accountability to the broader community. I think these... I apologise for not having to play the greater part in the formulation of these recommendations, but I am heartened and relieved, I guess. Clearly my input wasn't necessary because I consider them to be wise, well put, and as ever, exceptionally well defended by Steve. I urge you not to change them.
Thanks, Malcolm. You will have noted that I had closed the queue after Malcolm. So since Avery and Jorge haven't spoken from the floor, at least, if you keep it very brief, please
okay.
Do speak.
Thanks, Avery Doria. I was just ready to pull my name out, but thank you. I'm a member of that group, though I admit the whole discussion about mutual accountability roundtable turned me into a passive member because that was such a dog's breakfast of a discussion. And partly because we had no notion about what we were being accountable for when we started talking about having a roundtable. But listening to this discussion has convinced me that we really do need one, that we do need an event that basically allows people, because the border issues between the various groups need a place to be worked out. And as soon as somebody said, oh, we can go to the board to handle those, was the alarm bell. No, that's not it. If we've got issues of accountability to each other, we got to sit around a table. Now, maybe we should call it the mutual accountability kitchen table as opposed to a round table, so it seems a little less important. But sitting around a table and talking about our mutual accountability border issues seems to make sense to me. Thanks.
Thanks. Jorge?
Hello. Good morning, and thank you for giving me the floor, although you had closed the queue. Very similar to what Jan and what Avery and others have expressed, I think that there's a value in having a permanent open process or group or whatever you may call it. It provides for a venue where to discuss these more structural issues with each other, and it also creates a group of interpreters, of cultural translators between the different SOs and ACs. I think there's a lot of value to that, and I think that we have learned a lot in this process, and it would be really a loss to no longer have this in the future, and it would erode perhaps the value we have created during the last 2 years, and it wouldn't be helpful for the mutual understanding of the different parts of the community, which I think the people in this CCWG have contributed a lot and can contribute a lot more in the times to come. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jorge. And it turns out that there obviously is the need for discussion, or there's the perceived need for discussion by many of you. The question is this really what the evaluation of the mutual accountability roundtable idea was? And that was the task for the sub-team to work on. So my suggestion to you, and I'm looking at the rapporteurs to chime in on that, is that we take your feedback as, okay, we are happy with the recommendation as it is. We adopt this report as a first reading, but we take note of the need to discuss a forum that might be slightly different from this idea that was on the table for the sub-team, and thereby out of scope for the sub-team work. And we put that on the plenary's agenda to discuss, to have some sort of, whatever we might call it, kitchen table or what have you, for the community to convene and discuss accountability topics as well. Is that a way forward? Steve?
Before we design a new one, I would ask that people look at page 31, second paragraph from Willie Curry, which was May of 2015. He says, at the annual general meeting, there would be a gathering. It would be a roundtable of the board, the CEO, and all the SO and AC committees represented by their chairs, to Malcolm's point, entirely in inward focusing. So if this plenary wants to implement Willie Curry's idea on middle paragraph on page 31, then we do have a structure that was within our scope to evaluate. If people just plain want to do that, because a few of you have said, yes, we do want to do that, and that's the first time we've heard it within the subgroup. That's why we do first reading in front of the plenary. So your first reaction is, yes, we do want to do what Willie Curry described. If the answer is no, that's not what we want to do, well, then we are going to need specifics for other ideas, which was Thomas's point. But before you pick other ideas, please give us a thumbs up or down on what Willie describes on page 31.
I mean, Will is giving the rationale for what he's trying to achieve. Nonetheless, I think that we should conclude that the first reading on track two was successful as well, and we bring this discussion to the whole plenary where we pick up that idea for discussion. Nothing's carved in stone, but we're going to pick that up so that it's not being forgotten. So let's now move to the third track. Sebastian and Avery, do we need to continue this conversation? Track three, okay. Sebastian, go ahead.
Yeah,
I understand why you want to go that way, and okay, let's do it. But I just want to raise the issue that, in fact, the voice within the subgroup was so strong against that it was not really possible to discuss it, except if you put a very strong voice and long and time to have that. And it's why it came like that to the plenary. And the fact that it's coming for the first reading in this plenary can also have as a consequence that we need to give back to the group to discuss again this track too. That's another possibility, and let's go with agreement of the first reading for the track 1 and track 3, and that will not put more time for those two tracks to work out. That's another solution. But I really feel, because it's generally the problem, that we have few people in the subgroup, and that's good that they are there, but the voice of everybody can just be heard here. Then it's why we will face that with other subgroup, I guess. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. And this is also in response to the comment made by Cavus. This is not to not allow the discussion, but it's rather to give an appropriate forum for the discussion. Because I think that the ideas that you're sharing are different from what has been originally tagged the Mutual Accountability Roundtable. Yes. And that's the only point. So we want to give it more room. We think that the right place is not like now, but we're going to have a separate plenary discussion on this important subject. Avery?
My comments were on track 3. It's okay. Okay, I understand why we're not using the IRP. I think it's too bad that it's not usable, but I understand why. I happen to be in both of this group and the other. I don't think there are easier alternative ways, except maybe the ombudsman. I think the idea of using the mythical complaint officer is a bad idea. That is a corporate complaint mechanism that has nothing to do with complaints within the community. We may need to think more, is the ombudsman sufficient? And it may be sufficient, and especially if we take care of track two. But at the moment, I don't see easier alternative ways. And so that, but certainly we should not be recommending the complaint officer.
And I guess that's something that we can seek confirmation on with Joran when we speak to him after the lunch break. Cavus, your hand was raised.
Yes, I put in the chat that the importance of this mutual accountability is merit to have a few minutes more. I think this last paragraph of page 31 allows that such sort of the accountability be resulted from the chair of the SONAC. So perhaps we should say that, which may trigger the need to have that mutual accountability process to be initiated. So that is the situation. It is very, very important. So at this stage, I think we limit it to that and then leave it to the SO and AC chairs when they think that there is a need to initiate that process and trigger that process, they will do that. Thank you.
Would you like to respond to that?
On track 3, Avery, I want to make sure I notes aren't inaccurate. Did you suggest that the ombudsman is not easier than an IRP?
No, I just not so sure it's an alternative way. But it's okay. But it's the one I was saying is that the complaint officer had to be off the table.
And thank you. And the complaint officer is not in our report.
Right, but you had said it.
Because it's a topic of the day, right?
Right, but, it's not but, in but our you, right. you had it. Said it was a possibility, yeah. So I just wanted to say, whoa. Right.
Got it. So if recommendation track 3 is as we have it on paper, don't use the IRP, consider things like the ombudsman. You're okay with that? Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks for this very engaged discussion. I think what we can take away from this is that the report is fine for the first reading. We have some more discussion to have on track 2 to see whether we're going to come up with a recommendation from the plenary on some sort of community accountability or SOAC accountability format. We don't know yet that, but we will bring it back to the plenary soon. So with that, I'd like to congratulate the sub-team on this successful first reading. And we can give ourselves a round of applause. So that was excellent work. And I know we've reached the top of the hour and we've missed the opportunity to take 15 minutes to prepare for your run. And therefore, we're just going to give 90 to 120 seconds to Mathieu to outline what we're planning to do with your run.
Thank you, Thomas. I will speak very fast so that I can take the 120 seconds. what we've arranged is a conversation where we have invited Joran, and our invitation was so successful that I understand we will be very pleased and have the pleasure of welcoming not only Joran, but also Steve Crocker and George from what I get. So we'll have a panel with us for an hour of conversation. The issues we had outlined for this conversation are related to our agenda. We think highlighted that it would be interesting to go through the staff accountability discussion, especially the part about staff engagement. And I have suggested to Jordan and Avery that maybe they could explain their perspective on this so we can start the conversation on this issue. I would expect, and that was highlighted as well, that we may have an update on the complaints office, which Joran addressed in the previous sessions with our group, and also a topic that we would like to spend a little bit of time on is the timeline of our group. As you know, we have later on our agenda the discussion about timeline extension and the potential consequences, especially the financial consequences, and the need for support. So that's also an item that we have identified as a discussion item. And then, of course, they may bring their own items, but I'm not aware of anything else. That's what we have in the lineup so far. Avery, is that a new hand? No, it's an old hand. Okay. Sébastien wanted to say a few words.
Just maybe we can have the new complaints officer coming with us this afternoon. Thank you.
I don't know. Everyone's saying he's been appointed.
I've not been notified.
I think let's not confuse things. We have a session where we invited Joran, and the ICANN leadership is going to be here. Let's have a conversation with the leadership and a conversation with a recently appointed officer. I mean, I don't think that's a very good welcoming gift to say, okay, come in front of the group and get grilled. That's not exactly the way to engage in constructive conversations. So let's keep the session as we planned, and seize the opportunity to congratulate Christa for her appointment. Thank you. And with that, I think we have lunch served somewhere here. Is that here or outside? Here. And we reconvene at 1 sharp. Thank you.